Best Buy's Geek Squad gets some competition. The Wirecutter joins us to explain how to separate the good stuff from the garbage on Amazon Prime Day. And sci-fi writer Rob Reed is here to talk about his new online publishing experiment. All that and so much more coming up on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1806, recorded Monday, July 10th, 2017.
This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Tracker, a coin-sized tracking device that pairs with your smartphone and keeps you from losing your most valued possessions. Visit thetracker.com right now and enter promo code TNT to save 20% off any order.
And by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/TNT.
Welcome to Tech News Today. This is the show where we tell you the tech news you need to know to look smart at cocktail parties, yep, school pickup, water cooler, wherever you are. We will tell you what you need to know.
That's right. Megan and Jason.
Oh, right. I'm Megan Maroney.
Are you ready to listen to us tell you about some technology stories? Because that's why we're here.
Is that why we're here?
That's why we're here. That's what we're doing here. All right. Top story here. Amazon has quietly started offering in-home installation of smart home devices, treading a little bit on Best Buy's Geek Squad turf in the process. Amazon's smart home services is live in 7 markets, has a focus on smart home installations, and as you can imagine, they integrate Amazon's voice assistant platform, whose name I will not say out loud, into the home. News of the new service sent Best Buy stock plunging 6.3%, losing around $1 billion of value today because of this. Because when Amazon moves into a territory or moves into a new type of service, competitors get worried. And actually investors of competitors get worried. Evidence of that is shown today.
I'm not shedding any tears for the Geek Squad, I gotta say. I felt neither here nor there about the Geek Squad until we reported that story about how they have a deal with the FBI to turn over people and who they find things on their computers. And I just found that kind of a little bit distasteful. So, but I do think that I kind of want to outsource this sort of stuff, but I really don't want to, because any of the smart home stuff that I've finally gotten around to setting up, it's like, it's sort of a chore, but it's really not that hard. And I think it's a really good learning experience for, like, for yourself and for, you know, I have my kids usually helping me set stuff up. So it's good. You get to get in there. You know, we have so few opportunities to get into our, you know, our electrical equipment, or just kind of see what's going on. So at least if something's going to be locking and unlocking your door, turning off and on your heat, I say know as much about its installation as you possibly can.
Yeah, but some people just don't care. You know what I mean? Like, and I think what this shows is that Amazon is really trying to, I don't know, bridge the gap for people to more mainstream the Echo, right? Because there are a lot of people that buy technology because they hear it's cool, but don't necessarily care on the level that definitely a lot of Twit listeners and viewers care about technology. We have a deeper understanding or deeper desire to understand, and so we don't mind going in there and kind of stumbling through those roadblocks. This at least allows people who have heard about this Echo thing and hear that it's a really big deal and everything to get one and not be afraid about getting one because, I don't know, smart home, I've heard, is really complicated and unsafe and hard to set up. This way they have a way to do it from Amazon itself. They're pricing it around $99 for simple installs, more complex, more cost, obviously. And the markets right now, Seattle, Portland, SF, San Diego, Orange County, and San Jose to start. But apparently Geek Squad, I didn't know this, around 5% of Best Buy's revenue. So, I mean, that's a chunk, but it also kind of seems kind of small.
I don't know either. I mean, things are getting easier to use.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe
like,
that's
technology
it. Yeah.
Is getting easier to use. I mean, Recode said that Amazon's been hiring home gadget assistants, installers for a while. So, I mean, if that's something that you're good at, then I say, yeah. And, you know, you're looking for a job, that'd be something to get into. I'm sure they're expanding. But yeah, I think, I mean, it's one thing to be like a geek about Linux and say like, you know, I'm not going to get inside any Linux boxes anytime soon. But if it's something that you're putting inside your home with your family, I think, like I said, I think you should do it yourself.
Yeah. Understood.
Twitter announced new advanced filter settings for your personal war against trolls and bots. If you go to settings, notifications, advanced filters, you can mute any user who doesn't follow you or who has a brand new account. This is in addition to the filters rolled out back in March that let you mute users who don't follow you. Now, all of these measures are designed to control how much hate speech and misinformation you see while simultaneously not blocking anyone's free speech. Because everyone has the right to free speech, even if they don't deserve it, because it's not about deserve. It's about what you believe. And I believe in love and free speech.
Yeah, man.
Wonder Woman. Yeah, thank you, man. Kevin. Yeah. I won't stop quoting Wonder Woman when it is appropriate.
See, I was just more on like Freedom Rock, man.
No, I know, because you haven't seen Wonder Woman.
No, you're right. I haven't. And I promise I will one of these days. Mm-hmm. Probably not while it's in the movie theater. And I'm sorry. But yeah, Twitter told Axios that they don't plan to roll out a tool that flags inaccurate tweets, which I think that's appropriate, right? Like, Twitter's in a very challenging position here where they're trying to figure out how they gain some control over the platform while at the same time not making it seem like they are walking around telling everybody, hey, you know, this is what you can say and can't say. There are certain things in the terms of service that you aren't allowed to do on the network, but I think it behooves Twitter for its users to kind of not get in there and get too messy with how it dictates what people are saying on the network. So, you know, they continue to go this approach of giving the user the ability to just not see or be exposed or be notified about these things that they don't want to. And so the more filters, the better. I'm really honestly surprised why they didn't roll this out earlier, but they continue to. And so props for continuing to do, I think, the right thing.
Yeah, I think they hadn't thought about it. I mean, I think that people made them think about it. People had all the different kinds of experiences on Twitter and they shared them. And then they did something about it. I really do feel like this, I can completely understand how these work. People are kind of like, what? It's a setting to mute people. There's no other setting that I love more than that mute, that no one, the person that you're muting doesn't know that they're being muted.
Yeah.
It's like, it is the perfect setting because it's like, if someone is constantly bothering me saying hateful things for whatever reason they have for saying them, I just mute them. They don't know. They're still shouting at me into the void. They have no idea I'm not listening to them anymore. Mm-hmm. It's beautiful because they can get out whatever they need to get out and I don't have to see it.
It's like go into the room and you know,
right.
Scream into the pillow.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's totally fine. I mean, I love feedback, negative feedback, any kind of constructive feedback. I'm okay with non-constructive feedback. And so then that's put into a different section of my notifications. And I can just take a deep breath. Whereas, you know, if I'm in the regular set of notifications, when I'm, you know, getting notifications from you or other people that I am friends or friendly with, like it's one thing. But then, you know, I go to this other place and I just... okay, I'm ready if someone's going to say something horrible. And I, you know, it's they're minor, but if you've had that experience of people just tweeting nasty things at you, this solves the problem for me. But everyone has their own personal experience. And obviously, if you are super famous, all of the trolls are going to find a way to get around whatever thing you have probably and find you anyway. Or you're going to have to just get off Twitter. You're going to have to block everyone. I mean, everyone has their own personal experience and mine is pretty minor and these tools work for me.
Yeah. Yeah. That definitely worked for me. Although I really keep it wide open because I hate not knowing what's going, you know what I mean? I hate being unaware of what happens to be going, but.
And people are always saying nasty things about you, Jason.
If they were and I had them hidden, then I'd never know. And then that's the other side of this is, do you want to know that this is happening? Because I don't know, it could blindside you at some point. And then you're like, oh, well, I had no idea. I was just hiding it all anyways. You
right.
Know what I mean?
If someone's telling some conspiracy theory about you, you have
right.
no idea.
Right. And we know how the internet works. That conspiracy theory could become the fact. One question I do have about this is, you know, one of these filters is about filtering out tweets from a brand new account that you don't follow. What constitutes brand new? How long of a period is that?
Well, that's a good
At
question.
What point is it no longer brand new? I guess we don't know that. But
well, you know, I mean, they're talking about the egg accounts often, like people who haven't put a profile picture on there. I'm sure they didn't say exactly what it was that they...
I couldn't find it. I read a few different places, but anyways, I think those are effective tools, and I appreciate that they're continuing doing that.
Right, and they're your choice. I mean, you don't have to mute anyone.
Right, exactly. Keep it open if you like. Megan, you can finally buy your very own Oculus Rift.
Awesome.
All right. Now that Facebook announced another drop in the price of the VR headset down from $499 to $399, it's a temporary drop, but still. If you buy at that price, they'll even throw in an Oculus Touch controller. Normally, that's $99 extra. That's now packaged for free for this special. That's the same cost altogether of PlayStation's VR headset setup, which has been kind of the inexpensive of the top tier solutions. However, like I said, limited time. The deal only lasts during the Summer of Rift promotion that they're basically doing. I think it goes through the end of the summer. I couldn't really find a date on the last day to do this, but you know, considering that there are VR rigs that the rigs themselves, the computers themselves, have dropped down to as low as around $650, that means right now you could get a whole Oculus setup with a touch controller for right around a grand, a little bit more than a grand. And that's perfect for you, Megan, right? You must have one of these.
No, that's like the price of the new iPhone. Why would I buy?
But you have an iPhone. You don't have an Oculus Rift.
That's true. And I won't be buying one anytime soon.
Okay.
And I mean, everyone says like this is such bad news for Oculus and they're trying to spin it. And Jason Rubin, who is the vice president for content at Oculus, says it's not about not being able to sell it. They just want to make it more of a mass market item. They want to give it more mass appeal. Which,
oh, that game's so much fun, by the way. Oh, anyway,
so yes, it's a lot. $1,000 that for you know, VR, which a lot of people are just calling a fad, and you know, with just the growth of AR, I don't know. I mean, this has to be right. I mean, I'm glad that you put in the amount of money that that the actual rig costs, because again, it's still $1,000.
Yeah.
So,
which is better than it was. I mean, well, what's crazy is how much it's dropped. Before I get there, Burke thinks it should be $199 for the VR headset and a controller. I mean, that's a nice aspirational price, but that would get a lot of movement.
What
yeah.
do you want?
I mean, really, I mean, when it boils down to it, for the majority of people, I think the fact that it's headset, controller, and then a whole computer, that's the big sticking point, because you have to really decide. Like, if the headset were it, if it were like the console model, I think it would be way more successful, because you know, with a PlayStation or with an Xbox, I get that and I have everything I need. But this, there's too many pieces, and I think the mainstream user, that's just one piece too many. You know what I mean? And an expensive piece.
So will you buy one?
No, probably not. I'm still kind of hanging out on the edge of this stuff, and I'm happy to see the prices drop. And I actually I have played some games on the Oculus Rift that I would love to be able to play at home. But I'm also, I mean, unrelated to VR, I don't know right now with my kids the age that they are about bringing something like this into the home. For me personally, I just know how much of a distraction it would end up being, and maybe later, but not now.
Yeah, I mean, I still think, like, if I were going to jump into the VR soup, I would probably get the PlayStation VR. Because it's $350 for a PlayStation. That's all you need.
Yeah, and you might already have a PlayStation. Well, I don't know if you guys have a PlayStation.
I don't already have a PlayStation.
Okay. Well, they might already talk you into getting them one.
Okay, I would totally get this Oculus if it worked with my iPad.
Someday. Maybe.
Amazon Prime Day is almost here, but with all Amazon deals, there comes greatness and then there's some garbage. Here to talk about how to find the greatness is Adam Burakowski from The Wirecutter. Welcome to the show, Adam.
Hey, glad to be here.
Thanks for coming on. So let's start with, what exactly is Prime Day?
So Prime Day is Amazon's attempt to make a shopping holiday in the summer. Usually the summer is a time of low sales, but Amazon for the past couple of years has been trying to really hype it up as this huge shopping day.
Awesome. And so do you have to be a Prime member to take advantage of the deals, or can anyone do it?
For most of the deals, you'll need to be a Prime member. There are some third parties and some minor deals throughout the day that you could do as just a regular member. But for the vast majority, yeah, you'll need to be at least a trial member.
Now, obviously, holiday season is a huge, you know, point in the year where everybody, throws their best sales out there. And I know Amazon really does that a lot, too. How does this compare? Because I know this is the third time that Amazon Prime Day has come around. It's obviously working well for Amazon. Is this the more important non-holiday to look forward to when it comes to shopping on Amazon when compared to like the holiday season?
It really depends on the kind of product category. There's a lot of things that are that have new products that go live in, say, February, like new models of products.
Right.
And you can get some really good deals in November for things like that, like, say, laptops, where they have the next model coming out in the new year. But we did notice that Prime Day last year had some of the best prices for the whole year. So it is definitely possible to score some like really out of the ordinary deals. And I mean, hopefully that continues this year.
Mm-hmm. So Jason and I have worked together for a while. And so we have this kind of he's a better deal shopper than I am. Like he recommended this website or app called Slick Deals. And I tried it and I just found myself buying all kinds of stuff I didn't need. Like, oh, it's a deal. I'll buy it.
Yeah, it's easy to get obsessive on things like that.
But
yeah.
He seems to find them, and I don't know. Like, I just go to Wirecutter when I need something, and I find the best thing of that something, and I order it, and I call it a day. But so you guys have found now, it's great, because you have all the deals. You have a special place on Wirecutter where the deals are. Now, how do you find the best deals?
Well, I came at it at deals from kind of a similar background where I was going on Slick Deals a lot. And I used to post a lot of things on my own sites. And one of the reasons I came to Wirecutter was so I could post more curated stuff, because I don't want people buying everything, you know, like I want people just buying the good stuff. So that's kind of the purpose of the Wirecutter deals feed. But the way we look at things, we do check Slick Deals still. It's a great site. We check sites like Camel Camel Camel, which give you a price history so you can make sure what you're buying is a good value. And we get a lot of like reader tips, as well as like we have on our back end of the site, we have some pricing data and things like that. So we can really check a lot of research sources to make sure the stuff we post on our deals handle is a good deal. But like the most important thing I would say about deal shopping in general is you should like check the historical data to make sure what you're buying is a good value.
So I have an Echo Dot in almost all my rooms. I have an Echo Show and the original Amazon Echo, both of those in the kitchen. I do not need another one. And yet the Echo Dots are $35.
It's calling to you, Megan. So, it's saying, I'm on sale, therefore buy me, even if you don't need me.
Right. This will make a good gift for someone. I mean, tell me why I shouldn't buy this thing I don't need.
You know, I might not be the best person to ask because I only just got the Echo. I don't really have like a smart home setup, and a lot of my friends don't yet. In general, I like the idea of just buying what you need or what you think you will need soon. So if I did have like smart home lights, you know, it's no problem buying like the Echo Dot. You'll just end up blowing a lot of money that you don't need to if you're just purchasing things that look like, or that even are a good price if you don't really need them. But if it's something that'll make your quality of life better, you know, why not?
Yeah, that's true. So I was going to ask you what you're going to buy, but I feel like I should tell you, if you don't have an Echo Dot, you should buy them. $35 is a really good deal.
There you go.
You know, I'm still learning about the Echo because I've only had it for 2 days now. I got it because of this got a lot of deals they're running where you can order something and get like a $10 gift card. And then if you reorder it, you get another $10 gift card. So I just got some food that way. You know, the dot looks interesting. I might want one in, say, like the garage because I have my gym set up there.
Wow, I've never thought about putting a digital assistant in the garage. You can, but that actually makes sense if you've got all of your gym stuff.
Right, you can do the 7-minute workout, and then it keeps track of your workout, and she gives really good compliments. Right. I feel like I'm doing an advertisement for Amazon. I'm not.
But you do love your Amazon Echo devices. That much is true. So obviously, they're doing a little bit of a preview. When does this all kick into gear? Is it 6 p.m. Pacific today? And have you heard of any, do you have any sort of sneak peek into any products that people should look out for?
Yeah, it's 6 p.m. Pacific, and so 9 Eastern, and that's when they'll start some of the Amazon device deals. Like, they're putting the Echo up for $90, which is the best price we've seen on a new model. They're putting up the Dot for $35, like you mentioned. Things like some of the Fire HD tablets, and they also said going live around then would be some TV deals. One I'm hoping, but I have no way of knowing because they haven't announced the model. I'm hoping that one is our upcoming, like in our update for our TV guide, we have a TCL TV. And I'm hoping one of those is that particular model of TV. It's hard to say because there's still a lot of secretive stuff about what's going live at 9 p.m. or 6 Pacific. Mm-hmm.
Well, Adam, thank you so much for joining us. I don't want to take any more of your time because I feel like each minute we waste of yours is one more minute you could be finding and posting all of the great deals on the Wirecutter. So where do people go to find all the deals that you've curated?
We'll be posting them most quickly on the Twitter feed, which is Wirecutter Deals. And the page itself will be turning into basically a live version of our Twitter feed for those that prefer that kind of thing. And we'll also be sending out emails and so on. But Twitter is really the place to go because you never know when a deal is only going to be around for like 3 minutes.
Thank you, Adam. Adam Burakowski from The Wirecutter. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Adam.
It's been my pleasure. Good talking.
Take care. I wonder what I'm going to buy, Megan. You going to get anything?
I'm going to check. I haven't checked the list yet, but I'm going to check it.
You're going to get a TV, aren't you? No, you already got a TV.
Yeah, no. Okay. What are you going to get?
I don't know. Probably nothing. Maybe an Oculus. They don't sell Oculus on Amazon Prime Day, though, so that's my challenge.
Well, a quick reminder that you can comment on anything we discuss by emailing TNT at twit.tv. And of course, subscribe to Tech News Today by going to our show page at twit.tv/TNT. Subscribe so you're the first person to get our show. After the break, get ready to meet Flutter, a diabolical, addictive new social network, and the fictional invention of science fiction writer and tech guy Rob Reed. But first, let's take a minute to thank Tracker, the sponsor of this episode. There is a ritual to looking for your keys. If you have keys, perhaps you are familiar with it. First, you check the obvious places, the couch, the kitchen, your pockets. Then you check the weird places, the bathroom, the fridge, the hamper. Then you start getting creative. I'm looking at you, peanut butter jar. 8 years ago, Tracker changed everything when they released their first tracking device. And now they've done it again with the all-new Tracker Pixel. With Tracker Pixel, you'll never worry about losing your things again. Tracker Pixel is the lightest Bluetooth tracking device on the market. Here's what you have to do. All you have to do is place Tracker Pixel on whatever you tend to lose the most. Your keys, your wallet, even your cat. It's small enough to fit on your smallest items. When you misplace an item that has a Tracker Pixel attached, you use your smartphone, and then a 90 decibel alert will help you find it in just seconds. It even has a powerful LED light so that you can find your items in the dark. They're under the couch, wherever they are. You don't even have to turn on the lights. You can find them. If you lose your phone, this is a cute trick you can do, just press the button on your Tracker Pixel, and then your phone rings, even if you have silented your phone. You can even locate your item if it's miles away, because every Tracker user is part of the largest crowd locate network in the world. So we're all part of this Tracker community, and Tracker's 30-day money-back guarantee means you truly have nothing to lose. Just try it. Go to thetracker.com and then enter promo code TNT. Don't forget to add that TNT. That's how they know that we sent you to them. And also, for your trouble, you get 20% off any order. That's thetracker.com, promo code TNT for 20% off. Of all the ways tech is disrupting culture, the future of literature is one that I find the most interesting. Despite our penchant for TV and Twitter and tech gadgets that consume our attention, a lot of us are still reading. At least that's what our guest today hopes. Rob Reed, founder of Listen.com, has just inked a deal with publishing giant Random House and online publishing upstart Medium to publish half of his newest science fiction novel, After On, leading up to the book's August 1st launch. Welcome to the show, Rob.
Thank you so much.
So tell us a little bit about this deal with Medium. I guess it's a deal with Random House and Medium.
Yeah, but I kind of put it together and they were both, you know, kind enough to go along with it. So basically, back in the dim, dark past, publishers would traditionally, would very commonly release a big chunk of a new book in a major magazine. That was how a lot of books used to get launched. They called it first serial. And that kind of stopped about 15 years ago as ad dollars left magazines, there were fewer ad pages and magazines started to shrink. And so I've been thinking that it's a good time to try to bring this practice back online. And Medium is a fabulous place for long form written content. And I know some of the folks there. So I got to talking to them and I got to talking to my wonderful publishers at Random House. And the result is we're publishing almost half of my new novel, and it's a long novel. So that's a couple hundred pages that we're going to be publishing on Medium in 12 excerpts starting today. And that is, I think, one of the biggest, if not the biggest, serialization deals in terms of sheer pages and word count and content that Random House has ever done. And they've been in the business for a long time. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, I think about it, you know, what you talked about, like magazines where they would publish the first chapter or publish an excerpt. And I think about the in the 19th century, when, you know, Mark Twain would publish the entire book serialized. Like it would come out, people would wait with bated breath for the next chapter. This is somewhere in between. I hadn't heard of half of the book. So you say this was your idea?
Yeah, well, it was my idea to put this deal together between Random House and Medium. Now, lots and lots of people have published books online for free. Lots of people have released chunks of their books. What's a little bit unusual is that it is a major publisher, Random House. It is what they call a frontline title, of which there are, you know, several hundred over the course of a year, but not tens of thousands. So it's coming out in hardcover. It's one of their priority books. And with a book like that, it's quite rare for a major publisher to release much more than the kind of normal segment you might see as a preview in the Kindle or on iBooks or something like that. So it is unusual that they're releasing a gigantic amount of this book. And it is kind of like that old 19th century deal. Dickens would release books like that, Mark Twain, and basically anybody who was writing books in those days. And it exactly as you said, they would either, sometimes they would appear in the mail, sometimes they would be serialized in a newspaper or other periodical. By the time the late 20th century came along, magazines, as you were saying, would normally just put out one chunk of a book in a single issue. So this is kind of a balance in between, and it's the sort of thing that we can do on the internet today, and particularly Medium is really well tuned toward it. I mean, it'd be interesting to do it on Twitter, but my book is 547 pages long and at 140 characters a shot, it would start getting a little bit slow after a while.
Yeah, let me just go ahead and thank you right up front for doing this on a platform like Medium versus a platform on Twitter, because I'm not sure that I could survive through an entire novel on Twitter, although it has been done.
It has been done. Pretty much everything has been done at this point with novels and online media.
Exactly, right? Because everybody's kind of trying to find how you bridge the gap between kind of the old guard and the new guard of how this distribution happens. Was it easy to convince Random House? I mean, this speaks volumes for Medium as a platform. Was Random House on board immediately, or did it take a lot of convincing to do that?
Yeah, so Random House views me as sort of their pet entrepreneur. So many years ago, I started the online music service Rhapsody, the company called Listen.com. We built Rhapsody. And it's a lot of entrepreneurs have gone on to write books. I don't know of any other entrepreneurs who've gone on to write really major works of fiction. I'm sure that there are others out there, but it's pretty rare. And so Random House kind of views me as their pet tech entrepreneur, which is true to a certain extent. And I'm known for constantly mistaking my books for startups. And so when I come to them with some, you know, kind of goofy proposal of like, hey, we're going to do this biz dev deal with this company in Silicon Valley, they usually play along. And I'm going to give Random House a lot of props. They're very digitally savvy for a giant company of any scale. They've been, you know, really smart about how they've used social media. They were super early getting their entire catalog up on the Kindle many, many years ago. So they're pretty digitally forward. It wasn't a very difficult pitch with them or with Medium. It's a pretty natural story, and particularly because this book is a very deep in the tech sphere. It's set in present day San Francisco. It's about the startup scene. It's about a diabolical social media company that suddenly attains consciousness. A little bit of a spoiler there, but you'll see that coming like hundreds of pages off. So it's very much about the digital world. It's very much about the online environment. So I think there was a natural fit there as well.
So if your books are like startups, do you buy them free lunch and like foosball tables and stuff?
Yes, I treat my books very well. I don't want any of my books leaving me for another author. That would be a terrible thing to have happen. And I also give them fabulously generous stock options as well.
Good.
So it's a very, my books are very, very happy with me.
Oh, good. So I know Medium is starting a subscription service. Like I've been contacted and I haven't looked too much into it, but I have seen some authors are giving away, you know, a video free, but then their content is behind a paywall. Is your book behind the Medium paywall?
Yeah, so they just launched their subscription service a couple months ago, and I think it's fair to say that they are in a period of intense experimentation with it. So what we're doing with this book, with my book, is the first three excerpts, including the one that went up today, are just basically open posts. They're free to the open internet. They'll always be out there. They'll always be accessible. And the three of them combined come to about 50 pages of the novel. So it's a pretty big chunk. In fact, that's probably more than 90% of books will make available in their, you know, free digital book preview or whatever. So that's a lot. The next nine excerpts are going to be members only at Medium. I'm pretty sure they've got a generous free trial policy, but that's also something they're experimenting with. So I don't want to misspeak on that front. But the next nine will be behind the paywall. I do know that Medium membership is $5 a month. Then the other thing that I'm doing, which is pretty fun, is I'm creating eight really long, in-depth podcasts that go into the science and technology that are connected to the book, because the book goes deep into artificial intelligence. It goes deep into quantum computing, synthetic biology, consciousness, neuroscience, all this stuff. And when you research that stuff, as I did, talking to lots of brilliant scientists and technologists, you find yourself wanting to put these 20-page digressions into your story about how cool synthetic biology is right now, but that's kind of lousy storytelling, so your editor gets really mad at you. So what I've decided to do is I'm making these really in-depth podcasts that are long-form interviews with people who are expert in these different fields, and I'm also putting those up on Medium. Now, those are also in the members-only section, but when the book comes out, and it comes out on August 1st, I'm going to put all those audio casts up as podcasts on iTunes and Stitcher and everywhere else. So those will be going up week after week after week after the book comes out. Initially, members only on Medium, but starting in a few weeks, that's going to be a series of podcasts that are kind of like, I don't know, extra content to wrap around the book.
So you're doing this podcast with our friend Tom Merritt.
I am.
And so who are some of the guests that you two are going to be talking to?
So basically, Tom and I co-host each episode, and we talk about the topic that we're coming into at the beginning. Then there's that long interview, and then we discuss the topic in the book afterwards. So our first episode is about augmented reality, because the book starts with an augmented reality sort of scene in a famous bar in San Francisco called Bourbon and Branch. And our first interview is with Marone Gribbets, who's the CEO of Meta, which is one of the three leading AR companies right now, in my view. The other two are Microsoft and arguably a company called Magic Leap, although they've never shipped a product. They've raised over $1 billion, so they're pretty prominent. So Marone's got products out there. He is really, really sharp on AR. That's our first guest. Second guest, we're talking to Adam Ghazali, who is a brilliant neuroscientist at UCSF. Adam is doing extraordinary research in the field of video games and how video games can quite literally reverse dementia. And that might sound kind of insane, but he's actually landed on the cover of Nature, which is one of the two most prestigious scientific journals in the world for that work. So he's our second guest. We talked to Sam Harris, very well-known author and commentator on issues of, you know, geopolitics, about nihilistic terrorism, which is another major theme in the book. We talk about digital privacy and government hacking with Cindy Cohn, who's the head of the Electronic Frontier Foundation. That was a fantastic interview that we just finished editing, and I'm really excited about that one. We talked to Steve Jurvetson, who's a really prominent venture capitalist, about quantum computing. He's been on the board of directors of a company called D-Wave, which is the biggest quantum computing company in the world, for 15 years, which is an incredibly long haul for a venture investment. As a former VC, I know that's an incredibly long haul. So lots and lots of people who are deep in these scientific and technological areas. Andy Hessel, who started the Human Genome Project 2 about synthetic biology, a bunch of folks.
Nice. That's a great, and a great kind of supplement to the content inside the book, which I have to imagine. I mean, from what I read, because I read through a piece, I didn't get through the whole piece that you put up on Medium a few hours ago, but from what I read through and some of the excerpts that I've read of yours in other places around the internet today, like the point of view of this story, I mean, you've got a very particular point of view about what the future of Silicon Valley and all of this technology that we're so deeply entrenched in right now potentially leads to. Do you have hope for where it's all going? And is this book kind of your perspective on a potential outcome, or is it total fiction beyond that?
I have cautious optimism. I think that there's two or three things that we should be really scared about right now. And if we are scared about them and we're properly scared about them for the next couple of decades, I think we'll make it through the century. But I think it requires a certain amount of foresight and paranoia right now. This will sound a little pompous, and I don't mean it that way, because I'm going to be citing what I think one of the greatest novels of all time is, but just using it not to compare myself to the author, but citing it as a phenomenon. I think one reason why humanity escaped totalitarianism in the 20th century was because 1984 was so prescient, and it came along exactly the right moment at the end of World War II, when totalitarianism was on the rise throughout the world. George Orwell freaked a lot of people out about that risk, and a lot of other writers did as well. And we got through a really scary time as a result of that, and as a result of a lot of other things. There were a lot of things, obviously, that went on in the Cold War that could have gone a lot worse. I think we have a lot to worry about, from the proliferation of synthetic biology, from what terrorists can very credibly do with SynBio in less than a decade, and also from the risks of artificial superintelligence, the kinds of things that people like Elon Musk and Bill Gates and Stephen Hawking and lots of other brilliant people have been talking about. I think we need to worry about the interplay of those three issues: synthetic biology, terrorism, and artificial superintelligence. And this book is a pretty serious rumination on those things. It is also very playful, because I do write in a very playful sense.
You do.
There's a lot of silly stuff that goes on. There's a lot of stuff. I have a lot of fun making fun of certain Silicon Valley tropes. I mean, the central character is this diabolical social media company that attains consciousness, but then rather than going all Terminator and trying to kill us, she basically takes on her character from that which she is, which is a social network, and kind of becomes a hyper-empowered, super-intelligent 14-year-old brat. So there's something that's playful about that. But it is also very, very serious, and it's a serious look at issues that I think are existential. And hopefully those two things together, plus a storyline that moves along pretty zippily, will keep people engaged and get, you know, some people thinking about these issues well before they become major problems.
Now, do you worry, as an author and a tech person, do you worry about competing so much with Snapchat and Twitter and, you know, every other, you know, Netflix that we could binge constantly? Do you worry about having that kind of competition that arguably George Orwell did not have?
Yeah, George wasn't really competing with as many things as writers are today. But, you know, I love the era that we live in. I created what's essentially the forerunner to Spotify. So the music service I started, Rhapsody, we were the first folks to get major deals, full catalog deals from all the major record labels. We created the streaming model that Spotify has since popularized so magnificently, and I love Spotify. So I'm very much a part of the problem or the solution or whatever it is that today's media is, and I think it's incredibly empowering for creators and consumers alike. So I think it's a magnificent era that we live in. And I would rather people read my novel because it's the thing that they really want to connect with more than anything else, with a diversity of choices, than to grit their teeth and say, oh my God, it sucks that it's 1871 and the only thing I can do is read a long novel. You know, I would have had more of a command audience back then if I'd managed to have a publisher. But I think it's wonderful that people are really empowered to connect with whatever they want, and the people who decide to read an ambitious novel in this environment are people who really want to be reading it. And by the way, that's why I'm putting so much of this thing up on Medium. In addition to the excerpt that I put up there, I wrote, you know, kind of a 5-minute read, a post about why I'm doing this. And I made a point that I'm very serious about, which is, you know, this novel, like all novels, costs money and it represents a time investment. And this particular novel is kind of a challenge. There's a lot of science and technology in it. It is not for everybody. I mean, no novel's for everybody. But this novel is perhaps for fewer people than a lot of novels because it is challenging. And I'd rather reach the people that it's really going to resonate with. And that's why we're putting a ton of it up on Medium, really. Maybe that's not why Random House is. This is probably bad for business. But really, if this isn't the right book for somebody, I'd rather they do things that are right for them. Because, you know, it takes a lot of time to read a 547-page novel. And I think that one of the great things about this program and about digital media in general is we can find the thing that's right for us and commit our hours to that. So, fewer people are going to read it than might have read it way back in the day. But frankly, a novel about a sentient social network probably would have struggled in the 19th century. Would have been seen as a little bit weird.
Well, if you are a purist and you need to just read an entire book in hardcover or your Kindle, you can read Rob's Year Zero now. You can get that on Amazon or any place you get books. But if you want to read the first excerpt, that's on Medium. Where's the best place for people to find all the excerpts?
Yeah, probably the easiest thing to do is just to go to my page at Medium. Just search Rob Reid at Medium. It'll come right up. The excerpt is there, and then also that contextualizing piece that basically put it into perspective, the one that's on the screen right now, write for 7,500 hours, then hit post. That talks about why I did this and what's going on with the excerpts. And then you click on that first excerpt, Dare. And then what Medium is doing is they're doing a number of these serialized pieces. And basically, a table of contents will grow. It's up in the, as you can see now on the screen in the upper left corner, it says part one, Dare. That will build out as more and more parts are released, and it eventually will go all the way to part 12. And so, you know, come on into Medium. You'll find it very quickly and easily. I think they're going to be featuring it pretty heavily over the next couple of days. And or follow me, and you'll just have your Medium feed will be filled with each excerpt as they come out. They're basically going to be on a Monday, Wednesday, Friday schedule for the next 4 weeks.
And $5 a month is not a lot. I think it was Baratunde Thurston that I saw who had his content up there. So it's not, yeah, if you pay the $5 subscription, you're getting a lot more than just your book. But
Yeah, there's
really
a ton of stuff. And it's a really, I've talked a little bit to Ev and some of the other folks there, and I'm not obviously not going to steal their thunder, and they're still thinking a lot of things through, and they're going to announce a full program when they're ready to. But they have some unbelievably cool and ambitious ideas. So I'm really, you know, I'm not just saying this because I'm on the site today. I'm really excited about what Medium is likely to become with the subscription program over the coming weeks and months. It's pretty darn cool.
Yeah. And writers ought to be paid. It's hard work, like you said. Lots of research and work goes into this.
7,500
hours.
Yeah. That's nothing to sneeze at. I don't know how you do that, to be honest. That's
you
really
take
impressive.
3 years. The other statistic I'll throw out there is this book takes place precisely 9 seconds into the future. So you were talking about, is it speculative? It takes place 9 seconds from now. So it is incumbent upon the reader to read it very quickly, lest it enter the past. So nine seconds is enough time usually to get through 547 pages.
Well, as on all Medium pieces, it says how long it takes.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
This one's 25 minutes, I think. So
okay. This is 25 minutes. Wednesdays, I can already preview that for you. Wednesdays is a 20-minute read. And then on Friday going into the weekend, it's going to get a little bit longer. So we're trying to pace it to the rhythms of your circadian lifestyle.
Nice.
Awesome. Well, Rob, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you.
Check out Rob's new novel, After On, and all of his work on Medium. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Congratulations. All right, coming up, a new controller for the digital music creation set. It's perplexing to me, but I'm amazing nonetheless. We'll check that out. But first, let's take a minute to thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. They're the sponsor of this episode. The mortgage experience, you know, it's not that easy. It wasn't keeping up with the times. It was dated. It needed a client-focused technological revolution, and that's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage gives you the confidence you need when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. It's simple, Thankfully, it allows you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. It's convenient, of course. Their trusted partners allow you to share your financial information with Rocket Mortgage at the touch of a button. They kind of make it about as simple as it can be. It's powerful. Whether you're looking to buy your first home or your 10th, Rocket Mortgage is able to perform thousands of calculations in seconds based on your income, your assets, your credit. Rocket Mortgage analyzes all of that, comes back with a home loan option that's perfect for the for what you qualify for. You can find the one that's just right for you. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/TNT. That's rocketmortgage.com/TNT. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSconsumeraccess.org, number 3030. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support. All right, feedback time. Ben Cotton wrote in about our ongoing discussion. This seems to pop up here and there of why we see Facebook ads about things we didn't search for, but only talked about. Sometimes out loud, you talk about something and the next day you see this search item, this ad appear, and you're like, wait a minute, that's the thing I was talking about. That's so weird. Ben writes in and says, observational selection bias. My wife and I bought a Honda Pilot earlier this year, and now I see them everywhere. I doubt sales have changed much. I'm just looking for them now. Did the ad appear in the past, but just get ignored, as most ads do? I'd be willing to bet that it did. There's probably some truth to that. Mm-hmm. But man, sometimes it's so freaky.
Yeah, observational selection bias. I like that. I like learning about all different biases or biases.
And the terminology that accompanies
bias.
Them.
Yeah, I think bias is the plural of bias. But yeah, I mean, this makes sense. It's like coincidence, or a child has like a slightly odd name, and then you think, oh, it's so popular now. It's just because you hear it all the time. Top of mind.
Mm-hmm. It stands out, versus other times, just kind of fading it off into the distance. But still, sometimes it's so weird. Sometimes it's so specific. That's, I think, when it's the weirdest. When you're like, yes, but I've never even heard of that. And now suddenly there it is all over the place. Mm-hmm. It's weird. It's freaky.
It is. TNT's fan of the day is Suzanne Raymer on Instagram, who sent us this photo of her dog saying, your video of how I watch TNT with the dog barking set Spike off as well. This was a little while ago. We had to dig deep for this one. So that Spike is a cutie. Did not like hearing a barking dog.
I imagine Spike is barking or something. No,
looking away.
Just like, I can't possibly watch this.
Yeah. So send me your pictures of your dogs watching TV or your goats. I like pictures of goats and I like pictures of dogs. And if they're watching our show or listening, I would love to see that. And
you're guaranteed to get in here if you do that.
Yeah. And even if you have no dogs or goats, just show us how you watch or listen. Record a video. Take a picture of yourself or your setup. Post it to any of the social medias, Instagram, Google+, Twitter, Facebook. Of course, use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT and we will find it.
All right. I'm a sucker for music and technology stories and kind of how they intersect, those two things, music and technology intersect in crazy ways, especially in the modern era of music making where people can dream up how they want to control their music and then create the hardware to make it so. Sean Wasabi is a musician in LA who is also a video game player who loves the feel of arcade style buttons. Because, they have such a quick response and they just allow for this crazy type of control. He discovered a piece of hardware called the MIDI Fighter by DJ Tech Tools, which is a 16-button layout of arcade-style buttons that can be programmed to play individual pieces of music. But Sean wanted more than 16 buttons, so he reached out to the company that created it and worked with an in-house engineer to develop a 64-button prototype, 3D printed, that's the one that you're seeing here, which he put to use on a song called Marble Soda. Currently, that song has more than 18 million views on YouTube, and if you turn up the audio, you start to realize how weird, how crazy
really
this is.
I love arcade buttons, and I like how they feel when I press them. Those buttons are designed.
So every single time he's pressing a button, he's firing off a new sound or a combination or an animation. I mean, all of his finger presses are rehearsed. Like he goes through, I think he spent, it took him a month to memorize the key presses. And you're talking 64 buttons. Multiples can be held down at once to create another layer of sound. So it's not just 64 sounds. I think this song uses more than 150 samples. And I mean, it just blows my mind. Like, how do you do that and keep on beat? I highly recommend you searching out some of the videos that he's put up using this controller, because it's just unbelievable. It blows me away.
I bet I could convince my kids to practice the piano if that was their piano.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure, right? Well, he has another video that I saw, and I don't know if you'll be able to find it, and it's okay if you don't. But he basically cut together two separately recorded videos, and on each side are two different of the 16-button versions of the MIDI Fighter, with on one side a PlayStation 4 controller, and on the other side an Xbox One controller. And so he basically timed them both so that he's performing these songs, including piano. There's a part in it where he's playing this like really elaborate piano piece, and in order to do that, in both videos, he's holding a controller and using all the buttons to play all the different notes. Mm. And it's just, like, I'm speechless when I see stuff like that. Yeah, this is it. This is it. I think if you go halfway, he picks up, he starts to pick up the controllers a little bit later and stuff. But it's really unbelievable. Like, what? What is even going on here? I don't know. I love this stuff. Yeah. What do you think, though?
I love it. I do think that it could really get kids more interested in music, which I think is a losing art against video games.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, mm-hmm. Yeah. See? Exactly. We don't want to lose them to video games. So if we merge video game controls with music, then they're learning something beyond just playing video games. Mm-hmm.
Nothing against video games, but... Yeah. The combo would be amazing.
Anyways, if you want to check it out, definitely do. And you can actually buy one of these controllers. He had reached out to the creators of this hardware. What was it? DJ Tech Tools, that had initially created the 16-button layout. They designed for him specifically that prototype, 3D printed it, gave it to him. He started doing all these videos and everything. And out of that, people started like demanding it. Like, we've got to be able to get one of those for ourselves. So then they've made 1,000 units, and now they're selling it publicly for $500. Mm-hmm. So if you think you are a MIDI fighter, now you can do that. Megan, I'm talking
to
you.
Okay.
You can be a MIDI Fighter 64 player. And I know you will. TNT records live every Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 2300 UTC at twit.tv/live. You can be part of the show by emailing us at tnt@twit.tv. Leave us a short voicemail at 260-TNT-SHOW and find us on Twitter at TechNewsTodayTV.
You will also find us at our subreddit. That's technewstoday.reddit.com. And you will find all the ways to subscribe to our show at twit.tv/TNT. And if you want to tweet at me more interesting ways to get my kids to practice piano, please do. I'm at Megan Maroney.
And I'm at Jason Howell. Thanks to Kevin for not only editing today, I'm assuming, but also being the TD. He's shaking his head. So thanks for
stepping
doing double duty
at the last minute.
I know, swooping in to save the day. Thanks to Burke for helping out in the studio. Thanks to Jammer B, because you're right there. Thanks to the folks who are here sitting in the studio, because we have some live viewers here. That always makes us feel special. And thanks to you for talking with us today. We'll see y'all tomorrow. Bye, everybody.